This is the best of Scorecard Scribblings. Your host hasn't seen everything in sports, but sometimes he acts like it, and his guests probably have. Now, the host of Scorecard Scribblings, your sports guy, Brent Weber.
Well, a good Wednesday evening to all of you out there listening to Scorecard Scribblings tonight. My name is Brent Weber. Thanks for joining us for the interview tonight with a friend of mine who's been around, and he's done even more cool things than I have. I really like that about this guy. And just, but I first want to say welcome to you, whether you're listening on the podcast, Scorecard Scribblings, which you can download many places, or on our home station, KCNR, here in Shasta County, Redding. Thanks to my producer, Jared King. Always gets me on the air sometimes. Sometimes I don't get him off the air on time, but that's not his fault. So some things never change. I've always been able to stretch things that way. So wherever you are during this time of COVID-19, jonesing for your sports, this will have to do for just a little while. This guy that you're going to meet tonight, you have seen him, you have heard him. If you know or love anything about horse racing, I got to say, this is going to sound really weird because he looks exactly the same as he did when I worked with him many years ago. But for more than two decades now, he has been a part of the TVG scene. And that is, to those folks who love the world of thoroughbred racing and horse racing in general, that's the home to that world and really the pioneering spot for making televised racing and kind of coordinated professional gambling and so on in one place. And it's been a phenomenal place. It's not the only place, but it's probably where many of you know our guest tonight. I'm going to quickly introduce him, and then I'm going to throw it to a little bit of your podcast. But I want to get to our guest tonight, Ken Rudolph, joining us via the airwaves tonight from your home. Are you in Southern California living now again, Ken?
Yeah, brother. We moved back to our home that we've kept here in Los Angeles. We moved back last year. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. It's really great to hear your voice. I can just you're one guy who I've always been able to picture smiling, happy, and making the most out of life. And I'm looking forward to chatting with you a little bit. How is life for you? Because you spent a lot of years putting in you started back in 99 with TVG. You did done a lot of other things we'll touch on, but stepped away, came back home to Sacramento. Tell us how you're doing a lot, because some of our listeners up here in the North State may remember you from your time on Good Morning Sac and doing the morning news down there on TV.
Oh, yeah, man, I had the best time. I don't even know where to start, because a lot of it does start with the 2 years that I spent with you at OCN, which I thought was really just an exceptional place to be, especially for all of us at that time. And it really had a huge impact on my work ethic and also how to try to, enjoy the journey. And I remember so much watching you go out, and you'd surf, and you'd go shoot a bunch of stuff, then you come in, we all have to edit, do your show, and I'm like, then you'd go and spend time with your family. I'm like, that dude is not wasting a minute. So I kind of try to do the same thing. So I've always been super interested in everything that's happening. And TVG was really a great opportunity in 99 to explore something that was an absolute mystery to me and be able to see the world and really share and a really great passion and share my excitement with the world has really been an absolute treat. Being able to take the 8 years that I took for my family to go to Sacramento and be home was really it was so fortunate when that came along because our son had just been born and we were like, I don't want to put him in daycare here in Los Angeles. It's just so expensive and schools and everything and our family's in Sacramento and my agent called. She's like, hey, do you want to go home and host the show? Good Day Sacramento. And I'm like, yeah, who doesn't want to host that show? And she's like, yeah, and you'll do the news for CBS while you're up there. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So all my family was back there, and I was like, this is fantastic. And so we got to go back home, and I'd never anchored the news. So that was a chance for me to really try to, add another tool and just be better in general, just be better at my job and my profession. And I really loved the fact that it was a complete immersion therapy. Like, they threw me into everything. They used every single element of whatever skill set I may possess. They were like, yeah, go do that. Go do that. You want to do a radio show? Go do that, too. And so for 8 years, man, it was crazy. And so I was just really, really excited to have the opportunity, and I made the most of it. And I came back here to Los Angeles with new opportunities and just a brand new energy and just ready to continue doing the work.
Very cool. Well, before we get too far down the road, I want folks to know about one of your new projects, because it is one of those that's going to kind of pull all those skills together for you into the world of podcasting, which obviously I'm doing here. Mine's not as slick, you know. Mine's not all this slick.
What are you talking about?
No, yours is good because you got a cool open and all that. Mine's not as slick as some of those out there. Mine is basically us talking. But yours is, I'm really enjoyed it because, again, you bring the Ken Rudolph interest. I mean, you know, you have a passionate interest in learning about what the inside, what's driving people. And I like that about you. And you're bringing it to your podcast on, it's Believin' Horse Racing with Ken Rudolph, B-L-E-A-V-I-N. And I want to listen to a little bit of one of the early episodes that you've done. Let's listen to that, Jared, and then we'll ask Ken about it. Go ahead.
Not until September. How are you guys dealing with this unprecedented upheaval, this change in our industry as far as getting your horses ready for the biggest day of the year?
Well, I think the hardest part was when all this was happening, Kenny, I thought, man, how are they going to run races without – crowds and it was coming down. I just can't imagine a Kentucky Derby without 100,000, 150,000 screaming, partying fans. And I just sort of, I think the hardest part was to, I was a little bit in denial thinking if they cancel it, this is going to be horrible because I've got three really top Derby contenders this year. And, but when they postponed it, I was like, well, that's good. It's not completely canceled.
That's a little bit of the Believe Horse Racing podcast with Ken Rudolph. And I really wanted to pull that out because you don't have to be a diehard horse racing fan to know the voice and to know when you mentioned Bob and horse racing. We're talking about Bob Baffert, and you had Bob and Jill on. And if you were to tune it back to 99 when you started, and he was kind of one of those guys that, oh, my God, nobody can talk to Bob Baffert. Now he's calling you Kenny here 20 years later.
I think that's just one of the beautiful aspects of horse racing. It really is, I believe, the center of the universe. Everything revolves around horse racing. Everyone goes to the track. And so when I was exposed to that, people like Bob, I don't know why he did, and we talked about that on the podcast. He gravitated towards me. He said his mom loved me, just loved my energy and my enthusiasm, because I like all of them. They do something I can't possibly imagine doing. I don't understand that culture. So I thought everything he did was amazing. And the interesting thing about Bob actually ended up helping me to get another job, although he had no idea. So working at TVG and being able to meet Bob Baffert and be close with his family, and his wife actually was she was our co-host on TVG with me, Jill, before she left and married Bob. So we always kind of knew each other. And Jill's fantastic. She's just an amazing person. But the situation with Bob is I was working at TVG, and then Fox Sports came to me, and they said, hey, we want to do this show called Best Damn Sports Show, period, and we want you to come in and audition to be one of the correspondents. And I'm like, okay, great. So it happens to be the weirdest day, Grant. It happens to be a day where I go in, and they make me wait in the gym room, green room. And so I had just come off of working with all of you guys at OCN, and we got to cover the Angels. And so this is right after Mo Vaughn signs the huge free agent contract and comes out and works and comes out and plays in Anaheim. So that whole time he's there, I'm interviewing him. You know how we're all pretty much in with the Angels every day there at OCN. We're like right next door to them. So I walk into this green room to wait for this audition. Mo Vaughn and Bob Baffert are sitting in there. They both get up. I'm like, dude, what are you doing here? And I'm like, what are you guys doing here? The executive producer walks around the corner and sees me talking to Mo Vaughn and Bob Baffert like I know him, because I do. And he's like, holy smokes, you're exactly what we want. You know everybody. And I'm like, no, I just know these guys. I don't know anyone. I just know these two guys. But that guy thought that I knew people because Bob's like, hey, dude, what are you doing? And Mo Bond's like, hey, brother, what's going on? And the guy's like, this guy needs to be on our show. And that's how I ended up getting like that extra little push that you need to get through the door for situations like that, because I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. I knew those guys. It's crazy.
Isn't that something? And it is a crazy part of any of the media business. Businesses, the media, my grammar's probably not going to work there, but the point is, it's like, I think Vince Lombardi got the quote way back before you and I, even I was born, I should say, when you get to the end zone, act like you've been there before. And I think that's, something that, I've always tried to do. And I know, you've always been real cool about that. And that's an example of, be comfortable even when you're in an unfamiliar place and this industry can be good to you. Hey, I'm going to take a break because I do want to talk about a bunch of stuff. Now, you're going to hear, going to breaks, some pretty cool music, because that is another aspect of Ken Rudolph that I love. I've always loved his music. Mama's Gravy, find him on YouTube. You were doing that already when we worked together back in the day, and I know you love it. So we'll talk a little bit about that, too, when we come back. But as we go to break, we're going to listen to a little bit of Mama's Gravy. My guest is Ken Rudolph, the Believe in Horse Racing podcast. You know him from TVG. You know him from Fox Sports. And you know him from, anchoring the morning news in Sacramento. We'll be back with Ken Rudolph. Stick with us on Scorecard Scribblings.
Enjoy year-round access to everything Turtle Bay Exploration Park has to offer with a discounted annual membership. On sale now through May 31st for $15 off. All new and existing memberships are extended for the duration of the pandemic closure. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR. Now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
SST Oil on Windham Lane in Reading, your source for specialty fuels and oils, including kerosene and low-sulfur fuel oil. They feature Toyotomi heating systems and on-demand water heaters. Save $100 on a new Toyotomi home water heater and ask about special savings for residents affected by the car fire. Locally owned SST Oil, supporting the community through summer fires and winter snows. Stay warm and cozy with Toyotomi and SST Oil. 241-1167. 241-1167.
Alan Gordon here, Coachmaster Collision. Thankfully, it appears that Coachmaster Repair is an essential business and fully prepared to repair any minor or major damage to your vehicle. With the invasion of the coronavirus, Coachmaster is taking all precautions for the safety of our employees and our customers. We have closed all traffic through our lobby to ensure proper social distancing and will be disinfecting your vehicle upon arrival and before delivery. With the effects and response from the virus, we feel fortunate to be able to maintain all of our employees. They will be here to provide all services required for a proper and complete repair. These are uncharted territories. Let's all work together for a full, safe, and prosperous recovery. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Remember Coachmaster on Eastside Road, serving the Reading community since 1969. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Enjoy year-round access to everything Turtle Bay Exploration Park has to offer with a discounted annual membership. On sale now through May 31st for $15 off. All new and existing memberships are extended for the duration of the pandemic closure. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
This is the best of Scorecard Scribblings.
Sweet life, perfect on a burning spoon.
So do you recognize the voice? You certainly should recognize the groove. That's Mama's Gravy with Ken Rudolph, my guest tonight on Scorecard Scribblings. Brent Weber, thanks for joining us. And Ken, I loved that about you, that you explored your music even when you were, a guy doing sports. And you didn't just throw 100% of yourself at one thing. I think it's real important to people in our industries.
Yeah, I think it is as well. I really feel like you have to have some other passion that kind of continues to fuel you and drive you and also kind of give you that respite. And like I said, man, I know it sounds crazy, but behind your back at OCN, we called you Obi-Wan all the time because we're like, that dude goes out and you had to surf in the morning and then you were like good for the day. You're like, okay, now I can go out here because we got to go shoot all this stuff and edit all this stuff. And we're doing 7-minute sports segments and, you know, it's a lot of work. And so I was like, okay, I have this passion, and I just always wanted to make sure that I never let a moment pass by where I wasn't somehow trying to devote myself to that. And the friendships that I had, the guys that I met in Sacramento during the time when I had that musical awakening, I was like, hey, that's what I want to do. I want to play guitar. And so I met these guys, and they were like, yeah, I want to do that too. And so then you have this brotherhood, and that fuels everything. And so even when I was 400 miles away, in Los Angeles, in Orange County, I was like, those are my guys, and I got to still remain connected. So music was that thing that allowed me to remain connected with all those guys, and that's a connection, a brotherhood that we still share to this day. And I think everyone should have a little something that's, I don't care if you make crafts and sell them on Etsy, I don't care what you do, but you got to have something else that you feel passionate about that keeps you going. I'm lucky to have quite a few things.
I think it's a really great observation, Ken. I can remember hearing at a press conference for Terry Donahue. You remember Donahue was the head football coach at UCLA.
UCLA.
And he was in he was from OC, lived in OC too, right? And he, when he left, he shocked people because they all figured, oh, well, he must be going to get, NCAA. What did he do wrong? And he really, he knew he was going to be able to work in TV. He knew that he could work in, but he was done. He had been to 10 straight bowl games, something like that. And I can remember him at his press conference saying, if you're lucky in life, and a mentor told him this, if you're lucky in life, you don't have just one career. You don't just have one passion. And he said, and that stuck with him. And I thought that was really cool. I think that's kind of allowed people like you and me to leave the door open to try different things. For those who don't know, Ken started off, as a musician, as you heard there, a sportscaster, as we've talked about, and then a specific sports world, a totally different sports world, in the world of horse racing for so long, but never lost your feel. And I think that balance for doing other things makes us more adept or just more available emotionally to do something like, do a morning newscast, do a best damn sports show, period, or for that matter, in your case, even do films and things like that. I mean, I worked Shakespeare in the Park, but I never worked in a movie with Brad Pitt, or Bruce Almighty or anything like that. So you've done all these things. I think it's good.
I did one stage production, and it scared the absolute crap out of me, man. So, like, the fact that you could do that, Shakespeare on stage, there's no way I would do
Dude.
That. I was.
Yeah. I've died many times on stage and killed, and you have to at least die.
Yeah.
If you're going to die in every show, maybe twice or three times if you play multiple characters. But that was my segue into your time in L.A., and I'm sure hopefully you're still doing some of that stuff. But those are a couple of the films that you got a chance to work on.
Oh, yeah. That's more of a, it's weird when I say it because people think that I'm not being completely truthful, but it is a very much a circumstantial thing. I did not come down here with any intention at all to be in movies and TV shows. In fact, the first time my agent asked me about that, I was like, I don't want to do that, because I really felt at that time when I came down in 97 that was superficial. And she's like, no, just try it and just see. So I did a couple, and I was like, that's not really my thing, but it's easy. So sure, okay, I'll do it. And then along the way, there were a few where I was like, oh, that's super cool. I want to do that. Okay. But for the most part, I have to say it was just something that I did to see if I could do. And but then I got to a point where they were like, hey, we'd like you to be an actor. We want you to take these class. And I was like, hey, that's disrespectful to somebody who really is an actor. I'm not an actor. I don't want to be an actor. So I'm not going to waste your time by taking this class and waste my time. That's a space where somebody else could be in here, but I do appreciate that. And so I kind of made that break in between the two. But, I mean, if they need someone to come in and play a reporter or whatever, I'm like, man, I don't care. Sure, that takes me 5 minutes. I'll do that. But I didn't have that little push to make that another one of those passion projects for me where I'm like, okay, I'm gonna be an actor. I could never commit like you. You committed to Shakespeare,
but you
you
wouldn't have known unless you did it. Like, I always knew that was something I wanted to do. So, you know, and it's my daughter is a professional actor, and you wouldn't have known until you did it. Now, your son, when he's older, if he wants to go into acting, you at least got some chops, man, behind the scenes. You can help him through it, and you could help him through it with your performance experience anyway. But you never know where that is going to be a useful experience for you on the other side.
No, that's a very good point. The thing that I have been helping my son with, he's nine, and he's like the best dude ever. But I love sports, and obviously I grew up playing baseball and football, and so I've been managing his little league team since he was five. And that has been the absolute best time I think I've ever had. Now, I'm growing into the role. I'm an intense individual, so the first couple years I'm sure the parents probably still like, what is wrong with that dude? But now I've learned to kind of how to understand kids a little bit better, and they're not like me. But my son, he just really took to it, and he loves baseball, and especially now with everything shut down. And, you know, we lost our little league season, but he and I still have this thing where we go out and play catch. Seems like almost every other day I throw batting practice until my back hurts. I catch him when he wants to pitch because he loves to do it, and he's learning how. So that's just so much fun. Like, that's the thing that I really love sharing with him, is that teaching him about how to work a little bit, how to push a little bit. And Brent, I'm going to be a dad here for a second. He had the greatest moment. So we played, you know, we had one game of spring little league season before everything shut down, around March 15th. So our season started, we had a practice game, and it's my first time as the manager in the spring. So I've managed fall ball. Fall ball's abbreviated, not quite as intense. And anybody shows up, you can manage. Spring, you got to have some qualifications, right? So I finally earned my right to be a spring manager. And I drafted all these kids, right? There's 12 kids that I watched them all in their tryouts. I looked at their charts. I talked to their former coaches. And then we were like, okay, we want those 12 kids. So it was really an emotional attachment for me with these kids. The first kids I watched and I selected and I talked to the parents, I just loved it. We finally get to our first game. And, guys, the kids are just great. They do a great job. We come back from three deficits. My son pitches two innings. He strikes out three. And everything we worked on for the past 4 months is like coming out. And I'm like, look at this little dude. He's so competitive. We're losing. It's now 6-5. There's a way bases loaded in front of him, two outs, and he gets the single that drives in the two runs that wins the game.
Yeah.
And I just stand there and I'm watching him as he's celebrating with his friends. And that, you know what I'm saying, when that kid has that moment when they did something and they know it was all good and their friends are like, yeah, and everyone's going crazy. It's their first win. He knows he pitched well and he got the hit. And I just was like, man, this is the best thing ever. And
the hardest thing is to know, just let him love that with his friends, because you're a part of it no matter what. But you know, we got to just then let him love it.
That's what I did, Brent. I stood over to the side. I'm so glad. I stood to the side, and I just watched them mob my son, and my son mob his teammates because the guys ahead of him got hits. And they were just like appreciative of each. They were just, And it was so beautiful. I was so depressed when the camp was season. Because the camp was just so fun. And, you know, you see them overcome little things like that, and I was just so excited for them and for myself. I love being a part of that. So, you know, hopefully I can continue to help him with that aspect of it, showing him that if he works hard, you know, he's going to be able to get positive results. And he and his friends are going to remember that for a long time. They're going to remember that first win, I think, for the rest of their lives.
No doubt. This is Ken Rudolph, and it's spelled, by the way, R-U-D-U-L-P-H. If you want to find him on Instagram, Twitter, at Mr. Ken Rudolph TV. You know him as you know him from Sacramento TV. You know him from TVG Network. He's got his new podcast, Believe in Horse Racing, with Ken Rudolph, the ultimate outsider's insider, they tell us. We'll be back to talk a little bit more about a day that will, a race that will live in infamy at Churchill Downs. We'll talk a little bit about that. He knows what I'm going to ask him about. It's on one of his podcasts as well. When we return with Ken Rudolph and Scorecard Scribbling, stay with us.
Working from home? Conference calls?
You're still on mute, John.
With everything we have going on right now, it's never been more important to get the sleep we need. Quality Sleep is a natural immune booster, and only the Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your movements and automatically adjusts your comfort and support on both sides, your Sleep Number setting. So all those other things we're doing to stay healthy and happy, well, they'll work better too. Don't miss our Memorial Day sale. Save $1,000 on the Queen Sleep Number 360 special edition smart bed, now only $17.99, ends Sunday. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. We bring you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites.
You'll hear from experts on national security, the environment, veterans affairs, world politics, and everything in between.
Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your John Deere Ag and Turf products.
Join us every Sunday from noon until 2. wethepeopleradio.us.
Enjoy delicious Black Bear Diner food in the comfort of your own cave. Try one of our 9 new family meals to go, like the breakfast combo family meal loaded with eggs, thick-cut bacon, sausage links, and 4 huge house-baked biscuits. Or the chicken fried steak family meal for 4 with country gravy, cornbread muffins, and 2 large family sides. Starting at $19.99, our family meals to go feed 3 to 4, so try all 9. Order carry out or delivery at
Black Bear Diner.
No one plans to visit the emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need on-time, first-rate medical attention. Shasta Regional Medical Center, located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Reading, has the fastest possible transit and admission of emergency patients. We at Shasta Medical Center are dedicated to all patients who need care, regardless of their ability to pay. Shasta Regional Medical Center, delivering patient-centered health care with compassion, dignity, and respect for every patient and their family.
This is the best of Scorecard Scribblings.
Little Mama's Gravy as we come out of break. That is Ken Rudolph's band, his jam. You guys still playing? Is that always available to you, Ken Rudolph? Can you go back to the gravy if you need to?
Well, we're always brothers, and yeah, we do things only periodically. Like we did a show 3 years ago to celebrate 20 years since we put out our first CD together. And then we've had other projects together. I have a separate band with guys from that band called Tipsy Hustlers, which I did, and then I think we're going to do a show in 2 years, 2022. We'll get together for 25 years. So yeah, we're always in communication, and we talk and text, and when I come to town, we hang out. So as a brotherhood, that's not going anywhere.
So those of you who love the music, you know Ken Rudolph from there. Of course, I know Ken from his career as a sportscaster, and And then he was gone. We were working together. He was this young guy. And then all of a sudden, he went to horse racing. And it blew me away because I can remember, Ken, I'm like, what do you know about horses? And all these years later, I'm reading the on your Believe in Horse Racing podcast, the description, it says you're the ultimate outsider's insider for horse racing. And why did horse racing and Ken Rudolph work so well on TVG?
I think only one word, maybe, excitement. Or maybe even that word could be passion. I don't know. I have something about me where if I like something, man, I get into it. And I don't hold back. I'm all in. And horse racing is that thing where once it gets you, it gets every fiber of your being. It is unbelievable. Now, the question that you kind of posed initially is I didn't know anything about it. I wasn't really even a fan of the culture. Because to me, the culture was kind of exclusionary. I'm like, that culture doesn't include me as a black man. But then I did a tiny bit of research. My agent came to me with a TVG proposal, and I did some research. And I was like, wait a minute, there's a huge African-American history in horse racing. And then one night I went to Los Alamitos, and I saw just so many different ethnicities at the track. I'm like, everybody's here. Wait a minute. Then I went to Hollywood Park, the old Hollywood Park, which was there for 75 years in Inglewood, California. And I went to Hollywood Park, and I was like, oh, my goodness, literally everybody is here. And I was like, this is definitely the center of the universe. This is where I want to be. I think this is where everything is happening. So that's why it appealed to me. And I think because it's so universal and I am so outgoing, even though I'm kind of an introvert, I'm a weird guy like that, but when I'm around things that I don't understand, I want to know. So I'm open to questions, and I'm like, hey, what is this? What's that? What are you doing there? How does that taste? What does that do? So I guess just me being outgoing and really being a passionate person, I think that's what made it all come together, that relationship between me and horse racing.
And you mentioned something there. In a way, I likened it to, because in my experience it was the same way, though obviously I only covered a few things when I was at CNN, but I thought it was a rich man's game. And then when you get to understand it, sure, there's money at the top. Doesn't happen without those people. But most of the people involved in horse racing, it is a game of passion. Not unlike the boxing world, in a weird way, not unlike the surfing world. I mean, there are people who are there's so many people that have to get you to that point. But and even in Southern California, where I think it's hard, you probably really feel the pain of this when things like when we see tracks closing prior to even, you know, not talking about what's going on now, but the problems at Santa Anita Park. And they may be opening this weekend. I haven't heard anything. You may have heard something new. But Hollywood Park's not there. You know, we don't have Del Mar like we did before. Things like that. It kind of breaks your heart a little bit because it's the big event of just going out there. Whether or not it's a big event, it always feels like something special when you go to the track.
You are 100% correct. By the way, they will be running at Santa Anita. They've finally been given the green light, and they're going to start on Friday. So I do believe Friday is the 15th. So they're going to be allowed to come back. Churchill Downs will be back. So all these little tracks are kind of rolling their way back in. And so slowly but surely they're going to be back in the mix. But it is really a labor of love for them, for lack of a better term, man. I realized how, you know, being there and covering for 12 years, just every day being immersed in horse racing and going out to the barns in the backside every morning, you know, at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they're ready to go, and that's their day is starting. And it's just such a huge responsibility. If those people don't show up every day at the stable, how are those horses going to take care of themselves? So right. It's extremely important, that relationship that they have is extremely important.
He's the host of Believe in Horse Racing, and you were talking about his time at TVG, and I say it covers over two decades because, yeah, you took time off, but I know it was always part of you, and you guys, you've come back and you do some stuff here and there, I understand, and I'm sure if they called you, you'd be right there. Hey, maybe you can give me any more tips. They are still running at La Salle. But I noticed, and this is kind of a serious side note, but something that's really kind of hurt the industry in California in the last few years are the death of horses. They had a couple of more horses put down Los Alamitos today, or mm-hmm. I guess this week. What's going on with that, and is that, or is that just we're hearing about it more?
That's a combination of a lot of things, and I would never want to be the individual that is making the statement for horse racing or against horse racing, because there's so many different mm-hmm. factors. But it is, unfortunately, something that does happen. Now, the fact I think that it appears to be happening more than it should had to do with the surface last year at the track at Santa Anita. There was actually something going on with the dirt and the amount of rain that we received. There's a short amount of time. All of these little factors contribute to that huge spike in what we were seeing as these fatalities that were happening on track. I'm not a trainer. I could not even begin to explain all of the physiological aspects of dealing with these 1,100-pound animals. But I do understand and I do feel confident that everyone that takes care of the horses, everyone that I've come in contact with, they truly do have the horse's best interest in mind. Obviously, not everyone does that. We had a huge case, and there will be more, where there were trainers that were arrested and indicted, concerns of illegally doping the horses. That is going to be a situation that I think that horse racing now, collectively, I think they're forced to address it, and I think they're going to be a lot better about weeding out those individuals and trying to clean up the game more. But it's one of those situations where I cannot even begin to defend anything that happened out there at the track. I don't know what's happening. I don't know why it's happening at the alarming rate that it is. But I do know that my friends are trying hard to correct everything, and even the people that are not my friends in the industry, I believe that they are trying as much as they possibly can to fix all of the problems. So I don't know when it's going to turn around, but, man, I hope it does immediately.
And we can get to less serious stuff, the races themselves that are going on. And if not for TVG, you know, the horse racing fans would not be able to get their fix. For those who don't know how that works, I mean, you know, people can see horse racing. Essentially, Australia's got a lot of tracks running, the few ones running here in the U.S. You know, so there is horse racing, even though here, for example, in the North State, we used to have some racing in San Francisco. We used to have some little bit of racing in Northern California, and Shasta County even had for a little while, but not anymore. Thank goodness for TVG if you're a fan.
Yeah, it is one of those things, especially, you know, if you go back about 30 days, especially if you even go back to, let's say, March 15th is the day, I believe, that it's kind of the date that we all understand everything shut down. That's kind of the last NBA basketball game, I think, that we all saw. I know that was the last time that I was allowed to go into the TVG studio to work. And then once we gave the order that we couldn't go back into the studio, I've been doing everything from home. But from that point on, the only sport you've been able to really to watch is horse racing. And that's one of the beautiful things about horse racing. It's always there, and it's something that they can conduct with just essential personnel. Like, you don't need fans in the stands, and then that's where TVG comes into play, because if you don't have those fans coming in through the turnstiles to make those wagers, well, where are you getting that money to support the sport? Well, there's where your advanced deposit wagering companies come into effect, and that's where TVG really stepped up and filled a void for a lot of people. And it's not necessarily just about gambling. I mean, obviously, that's an aspect of what we do, and that's been an aspect of what we've done in this country, in this world, in this civilization since the beginning of time. So it's always going to be there. We just decided to make it easier and more exciting. And I think it's one of those things that's really helped me move forward because, you know, we work in sports. So when they shut down all the other sports, I'm covering the other sports too. And I'm like, what are we going to do? And so luckily horse racing was there, and it's been a savior. And a lot of people may say within the industry, hey, this is a chance for people outside of the sport to see us, and maybe we'll get some new fans. I'm like, well, don't need to really be so opportunistic about this. Let's just try to be good every single day. Let's just be better. And if somebody sees us, great. And if they want to join along with us, we'll be happy to educate them and show them the ropes and really how to find your way in this really, really tricky, tricky endeavor of picking winning horses, because it ain't easy.
I teased it a few minutes ago, but we're going to go to break so we can talk about 15 years ago, and one of your podcasts, the latest episode, in fact, on Believe in Horse Racing. It's spelled B-L-E-A-V. You can find it by Googling and find the Believe podcast. And you can download Believe in Horse Racing from pretty much everywhere, I'm sure, where you can get podcasts. Yep. Ken Rudolph is the host. We'll be back to talk to him about a day when he became legend himself in the world of horse racing and gambling. When we come back, you're listening to Scorecard Scribblings. I'm Brent Weber. Ken Rudolph's my guest. Stick with us.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane and Shasta Tanks. Because of the probability of our power being shut off during wind events or fires, many people are installing standby generators. Shasta Gas is now selling standby generators with propane tanks so that you will have home power during these outages. Give us a call at 365-3793 to get a quote on a generator and tank installation. That number again is 365-3793.
The value of banking local comes in being able to walk into the lobby, see the president, and be called by your first name, knowing that lending decisions are made locally by people you call neighbor or serve alongside when supporting a worthy cause. There's confidence in knowing that when you place your trust in Cornerstone Community Bank, you not only help yourself, you support the town you call home. Stop by one of our Reading or Red Bluff branches or visit us online at bankcornerstone.com. Cornerstone Community Bank. We invite you to experience how we are moving local dreams forward.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Don't be left watching Netflix reruns this summer. Use your screen time to future-proof your career with a degree or certificate from Shasta College. One of the best investments you can make is your education. So take the first step today. Summer classes start June 8th and enrollment is happening now. High school students, summer is the perfect time to pick up some college credits. With no tuition costs and enrollment is now completely online, call 242-7500 or go online to shastacollege.edu/apply.
This is the best of Scorecard Scribblings.
A little bit of Ken Rudolph in the back there. That's a little bit of Mama's Gravy. Sorry, I don't have any tipsy hustlers to bump in and out of. Ken Rudolph, my guest from the podcast. You know him from the horse racing world. His Believe in Horse Racing podcast available out there. And your latest episode that just dropped this past week celebrates something even I, a non-insider, heard about and found great joy in. 15 years ago, and I'm going to intro it. We're going to listen to it, and then you're going to talk about it. Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith earned his first Kentucky Derby victory. I'm reading this from your Believe.com site, by the way. 15 years ago, Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith earned his first Kentucky Derby win by bringing home 50-1 long shot Giacomo. Thus, the legend of Ken Rudolph was born. So let us hear from TVG's YouTube page one of their great TVG memories, Ken's Giacomo moment. Let's hear it.
Ooh, it's got music.
One of the longest shots on the board is my number one pick. I'm talking about Giacomo.
Giacomo breaks his maiden. Mike Smith comes back. And that's my Derby horse. And I'm like, what? He's like, just watch him. Just watch him. I'm like, okay. So I just watched him. And this is a horse that did not win another race. Gary's in Louisville, and he's on the phone, and Gary's like, hey, let me talk to Ken. I'm like, what's up, man? He's like, your horse looks great. I'm like, really? He just put in this bullet, who does a 7-furlong workout before the Derby? John Sheriffs. Bullet 7-furlong work. And Gary's like, dude, your horse looks good. I'm like, really? And then he says, Mike just said he's ready. And I'm like, that's it. Let's go.
And they're off in the Kentucky Derby.
Looks like a pretty clean break, right?
Yeah.
Wilco, 15th. Breeders' Galaxy, 16th. Giacomo, 17th in between horses. Sorted out as 18th.
See Giacomo, Ken?
What's that?
See Giacomo, right? Yeah.
Don't get badly. Charge on the far outside.
Giacomo. Where's he at?
Giacomo. In the blue. Coming down to the finish. Closing argument, short lead. Giacomo, a fleet edge.
Giacomo.
Get it. It's a three-horse photo finish.
Get it.
Ken.
Another winner.
What?
What?
What? What? What? I have ever seen.
What?
Why am I sweating over here?
What? I can't.
It obviously increased my confidence. Not that I needed that. And my comprehension of the sport. And it helped to buy the condo that we still own.
That is the story from TVG, but that was, what was the bet, Ken? What year was this?
This was 2005, and it was a series of bets because we had a thing called future wager, so you kind of had a chance to bet your horse, and you still do for derby purposes. You can bet your horse, and sometimes you'll get better odds in the future wager than you would the day of. Well, Giacomo was 25-1 in the future wager, so I have money on him there, and then I bet again the day of at 50-1. And so collectively it was a series of bets, and I had about $100 to win that day.
Wow.
On the horse. And like people talk about, I'm like, it didn't buy the condo. It just gave me this confidence, helped with the closing cost, and I bought like a new sofa and stuff like that. So it was that kind of thing where it just kind of helped give me the momentum to move forward and be a grown up.
And
everything later, that kind of stuff.
How many times have you hit a 50-1 long shot in the Derby since?
One other time.
Yeah?
I hit last year at 65-1. I had Country House. So last year, Kentucky Derby winner in 2019 was via disqualification, the first time it's ever happened in 145 runnings of the Kentucky Derby. The winner was a horse that interfered with horses coming around the turn, and this was another chance to educate the public because the horse almost caused three or four horses to go down, and if a horse goes down on the track, everyone gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So the judges had to disqualify that horse. My horse was running second at 65-1, and so he became the winner.
Wow.
I bet that one as well, and it worked out.
All right, so how about we talked a little bit about movies earlier, and I'm kind of I'm a sap. And when it comes to horse racing movies, I mean, obviously I'm a Disney, I believe in fantasy. I just saw not too long ago the Secretariat film. There was that I grew up, watching as a kid. That would have been the first time, I would have seen or any of that stuff. What does the industry think about, like the film Secretariat, the film Seabiscuit, which were, I think, beautiful movies? Were they behind those films? I think they were, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. As far as I could tell, absolutely. Especially when Seabiscuit came along because there are a lot of my – hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Sorry. I dropped my phone. Sorry, that was my fault. There are a lot of my friends within the industry of horse racing who were brought on to be, the technical riders and to be consultants and to be actors and to be stunt doubles and things like that in Seabiscuit. So I know that they were all part of that. And Gary Ross, who I do believe was the director and screenwriter of Seabiscuit, was prevalent with us at the track. He came out to Breeders' Cup Day. In fact, the day that he was at Breeders' Cup to present the guy who made Seabiscuit, we had a dead heat photo finish, which had never, ever happened in the history of this Breeders' Cup race.
Wow.
And it's because he was there. And we're like, man, we can't even write this in Hollywood. And so everyone was pretty much behind him. The Secretariat production, I'm not as familiar because it took place, I do believe they were in Kentucky for a lot of that shoot, where
probably
they were shooting Seabiscuit a lot in California. But I do believe that the industry was behind you. I don't recall hearing any backlash or anyone. I don't even remember any complaints about the movie, you know, after the fact. You know how sometimes people will not like the way they represent your sport or your culture. But I don't recall there being any backlash at all with those two movies. I think they were very successful, and I think they did a really good job of capturing a lot of the hard work and a lot of the magic that takes place with horses.
Have you become a historian at all in terms of horse racing, or are you just, you know, learning and living and sharing the moments in the industry? I say that in because there's some old-timers that are around that I'm sure you've met over the years.
You know, I think I'm more of the latter. I do try to be a bit of a historian. In fact, part of what I'm doing with this podcast is the entire purpose of the podcast is to bring people in from outside. And it's twofold, to bring people into the world of horse racing from outside who are not necessarily familiar with how fun it can be. Mm-hmm. And also an excuse for me to have a show. And so what I want to do, like this week I'm super excited because I'm doing my first outside of horse racing guest. So my guest is a guy named Steve Gorman. Steve Gorman was the drummer of the Black Crows.
Right.
Black Crows, all-time favorite band. And so being able to connect with Steve over the past year and forge a friendship, and then he's decided to come on the show. And his band has played at the track, and he's gone to the track, and he got stories of going to the track. And then we talk about music and sports. And so I just feel like I really want to share a lot of the moments with people. But then there's a different aspect where I am quite a historian because there are all these amazing jockeys that I've met and trainers and owners. And then there's also the reason why I got into the sport was the African-American history, the deep tradition that is in horse racing. And I want to bring that back to the forefront. I want to remind people how amazing these individuals are and that there are so many of them out here today that are they're African-American jockeys that they don't really get a lot of attention. And I don't think it's anything to do with them being any negativity. It's just something that doesn't really get much attention. So that's what I'm here for. So I really just want to share, but I also want to bring a little bit of history in. And at some point I'll have guys like Lafitte Pinkai Jr. on the show and Gary Stevens, these really amazing Hall of Fame jockeys, Chris McCarron, these legends, these individuals who'd be on the Mount Rushmore of horse racing and have them on the show because there's something really interesting about that aspect of it as well, what those guys went through.
And you know when they go through, we don't realize till we see great ones that are injured, you know, how dangerous their job is. The men, not just the horses.
That was one of the things that kind of struck me at the beginning when I first started watching. It was just how, I don't think just how dangerous it is, but just how the men and women that are riding these horses approach it. There's a lot of respect for that horse. And then I just sit, like, there's a, I do believe she is the only female jockey in the Hall of Fame, Julie Crone.
Mm-hmm.
Julie Crone is this amazing individual who is the tiniest person that you'd ever want to meet. But Julie will knock you out. Julie is the strongest little woman I think I've ever seen in my life. And then listen to her tell me stories of how she's handling this 1,200-pound animal. And just how strong they have to be, not just physically, but also mentally. And then the things that they go through to get ready, you know, they have to be at a certain weight. They have to, their lifestyle is a certain, it's pretty strict. And they make a lot of sacrifices. And only maybe 5% of them, maybe 5 to 10% of them are wealthy.
Right.
And the rest of them are just, you know, plugging right along. And it's because they really love horses. And it's really amazing what they do. I just love hearing their stories from day to day. Like Lafitte Pinkai Jr., who was the greatest athlete. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as the greatest athlete, the most fit, the fittest athlete in the country.
How about that?
The dude's diet was a peanut. The dude ate a peanut. He told the story about how he ate one half of a peanut on the flight from California to New York, ate the other half coming back. That was kind of not crazy.
You know,
that's easy.
I wish, and we'll have to do this again sometime, but because there are things that I think I can experience through you, and that's part of what you do so well. But I remember the first time where I understood greatness in a horse when I had the chance to – I was covering Cigar when Cigar was going for a record, I think, 16th straight win. I did not get it. This was down in – I believe it was in Del Mar. But I can remember going in there – and watching that horse in the morning And he loved it. I mean, loved the attention, loved the people.
Yeah.
He was a star. Do you remember the first one of those you saw?
You know, here's the thing about that, Brent. I'm afraid of them. So it took me the longest time
yeah.
to get up close to a horse.